As we know, when we read about the khandhas, we read about gross, subtle, internal, external, inferior, superior, far, near. Now, if we're talking about rupas, for example...
What do you mean by superior and inferior?
Well, this is what I'm actually going to ask about.
Fine, refined, coarse.
Right, so gross, subtle, that's clear about rupas. Internal, external, clear, and then the translation, okay, so it should be coarse or fine. Can you give an example of a coarse and fine rupa?
Whenever it arises, you know.
Whether it's okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Depending, so visible object could be coarse or fine, or any rupa could be coarse or fine. Tangible object can be coarse or fine, and then far or near, okay. That's
fine or what?
Fine.
Really? Yes. Because a friend asked me to write a kind of translation of the Natalakana Sutta in very simple everyday language. So that's why I wanted to check that. And on the when we were talking with Metta about Satipatthana Sutta and Kayanupassana, and we were talking about how it's just referring to rupas commonly taken for the body, such as tangible object. Now, in the discussions in Vietnam, Jonathan had mentioned that in the commentary under Dhammanupassana, it mentions any rupa. And apart from the commentary here, it says, or in the contemplation on the body, the laying hold of the khanda of corporeality or materiality was spoken. Would you like to, is that the part?
I'll just read the from the commentary translation in English, published as Way of Mindfulness. After explaining the arousing of mindfulness of the 16-fold contemplation of consciousness, the Master said, and how, O bhikkhus, in order to expound the 5-fold contemplation of mental objects, Dhamma, things spiritual and material. Further, the laying hold of pure corporeality or materiality was taught by the Blessed One in the instruction on body contemplation. And in the instruction on the contemplation of feeling and consciousness, the laying hold of the purely spiritual. Now, in order to teach the laying hold of a mixture of the material and the spiritual, he said, and how, O bhikkhus, and so forth. Or, in the contemplation on the body, the laying hold of the aggregate of corporeality or materiality was spoken of by the Master. In the contemplation on feeling, the laying hold of the aggregate of feeling. In the contemplation on mind, the laying hold of the aggregate of consciousness. And now in order to speak of even the laying hold of the aggregates of perception and formations, he said, and how, O bhikkhus, and so forth.
So I'm just mentioning that this is why, even though it in the first section it spells out or it implies that it's just the rupas taken for the body that are included in Kayanupassana, that when one reads this commentary at the end, it could refer to a broader sense to, or as Jonathan understood it, to any rupa khanda. Do you have any comment?
Which we used to think that it's the body.
But only those which we used to think as the body, I think. Yeah. Correct, yeah.
I understand. Can you talk a bit more about what you just read?
Thank you for asking. Apart from English translations of pardon, sorry. I must
I see, sorry, yeah. I must say sometimes I find the translations of the Pali into English difficult. If I can have a look at it myself, it's somewhat easier, but sometimes when I listen, I think, oh, dear me, that's difficult to unpick all that for me. So I appreciate your question. And perhaps what I'd like, if possible, to have a little bit of the background of that, because it's difficult to, I found it difficult to follow.
I think the key point is that any rupa is rupa kanda. And in the section under Kayanopasana, the Buddha refers to various kinds of rupas which are commonly taken for the body, such as breath or parts of the body or 32 parts of the body. So these are actually different rupas commonly taken for the body, and because there's no understanding of rupa as rupa, there's the idea of body and posture. And he mentioned these ones because this is what there's usually a lot of attachment to, the rupas of the body in particular. And in at the end of the section, at the end, there's a summary, and here it refers to laying hold of the aggregate of corporeality or materiality. This is rupa kanda being referred to. So the question is, when he just mentions rupa kanda in general, whether he's then saying, well, actually it includes any rupa, or it's still implied that it's just the rupas taken for the body. And Ajahn said it's just the rupas taken for the body. So one has to know when it's rupa kanda is referred to, it doesn't mean any rupa, but it means those rupa kandas taken, assumed to be a body.
I think ultimately it doesn't matter anyway, because the rupas that aren't covered under the rupa kanda section are covered under the dhamma section.
Some examples of that?
Well, example would be the rupa that we take for table.
Oh, okay.
Rupas aren't, yeah.
The point of the discussions, and this is what I was chatting to Metta about at the airport, was actually trying to pinpoint under what section isn't. It's just thinking what's important is just understanding hardness as hardness, no matter it's this hardness or that hardness, whether it's taken for a table or a body. At the moment of awareness, it's just awareness. It's just hardness, just that characteristic of hardness that appears. But because there's so much ignorance and wrong understanding, usually this hardness is taken for a table and this hardness is taken for the body. So this is why the Buddha is referring to the rupas that are commonly taken for the body, whether inner or outer. So whether it's a rupa taken for this body or the rupa taken for that body, it's a rupa taken for a body.
Okay, thank you for that.
It's becoming a little bit clearer to me. But what I'm curious about still is the nature of your question. I understand what you've said, but what was your question to Ajahn in relationship to that?
We understand that the rupas referred to under Kayanopasana are just rupas taken for being the body, but the commentary note could be read to suggest any rupas are being referred to, but it depends how one reads it, because it just mentions rupa kanda, but it's those rupa kandas taken for the body.
I think that it doesn't matter at all whether it is rupa taken for the body or not. But since we usually think of this body, that's why there should be the understanding of the body as only rupa, like other kind of rupa.
So it's really just stressing how there isn't any body or posture. They're just rupas that are taken for body or posture in this way.
Well, in Vietnam, hearing the questions and answers regarding rupa, I found myself considering it more, and I've talked about this with Nina and Jonathan, but the the rupa, visible object. Visible object is one of the eight inseparables. So when visible object arises, or just a minute, when seeing sees, knows visible object, it knows the visible object that is one of the eight inseparable rupas.
At that moment, no idea about the other rupa at all.
Mm-hmm. So it's a really only theoretical. Yes, it only experienced visible object. I realize that. So I know, and I realize what I'm thinking about is very theoretical. But okay.
But that visible object that it experiences,
is that particular one because it is conditioned by the four primaries and the other rupas that arise together
yes.
with. So
yes.
that's why it's that one and not another
right.
one. So it's because it's
and
conditioned by them.
And it's also conditioned by gamma, that seeing arises to see it.
Right.
Yes. Okay, and sound, which is not one of the...
The rupa is conditioned.
No, the seeing is.
Yeah, just
the yes, idea. Yes, yes. I realize I headed into that the wrong way. But it's the experiencing of it. And for sound, for instance, which is not one of the eight inseparables, it arises then together with the eight inseparables and can only be experienced by hearing consciousness. Again, which is vipakajita.
When sound arises, there have to be a minimum of nine.
Right, yes, that's what we were talking about. And Nina was explaining that if it's sound, well, maybe Nina can explain it again. As I understood that where it was sound produced through jitta in the body, it was one of the conditions that there are more. It's not just the nine
because
rupas.
Is conditioned by chitta or by vinyana.
Yes.
It can be conditioned by chitta or by wind, but also when speaking, it's necessary that there is lightness and pliability. These three of lightness play their part.
I thought it was by chitta or temperature.
Yeah, or temperature. That's right, yeah. Wait a minute. Is it not wind? Vayu dhatu? Sound. I don't know. Sound or smell by vayu dhatu. But it's a part of vayu dhatu. Sound or smell. You are talking about sound or
sound.
Smell.
Sound.
So what do you mean?
Can it be conditioned by chitta?
Chitta?
Yeah. Or by vayu dhatu, the wind element.
It's utu.
Utu.
Yeah.
Utu, temperature. Uh-huh. Must be temperature.
Okay. Yeah. So the sound outside is only conditioned by utu temperature,
yes.
But the sound like when one's speaking, or the sound inside, chitta or mm-hmm. utu.
You're
saying the kala.
You were asking about nine inseparable rupas. And you're wondering whether the sound outside and the sound of the voice still nine inseparable rupas. I mean, yeah, eight plus one.
Yeah.
So nine rupas, right? And I think that was your question, whether it's always nine rupas for sound.
Or
sound
more,
outside
or more.
And I think it's the or more when it's inside the body, right? The sound conditioned by chitta.
By chitta, yeah.
It's more than nine rupas.
Yes, I think so. It can
right.
be.
Right, but the sound outside the body.
And what's more?
No. Only nine.
Only nine, but you just talked about pliability. Oh, that's part of the Mahabhuta Rupas, isn't it?
No.
No? Lightness and pliability. Okay.
Those don't seem to be counted when they start counting them.
Okay, I think we're getting very theoretical here and away from the present moment.
So how many rupas when it's the sound of in the body?
Nine.
When it's not voice. Yeah.
And if it's voice, it's
more than nine. Yeah, because it's conditioned by citta.
Yes, but the sound itself, the rupa...
The sound is conditioned by citta.
But the sound itself has how many rupas?
It needs another three rupas.
Which ones?
To make a noise?
No, the noise itself, the sound itself, the voice itself.
Together with three in that kalapa.
What three?
Lightness.
Is that the quality? Those
can
three.
It arise like when it's conditioned by temperature? Is it different or not different? What makes it different?
So the voice now and the voice from the tape are different because there are three more in now.
Is confused about sound and involved in the story that we hear and forget to be aware of just sound.
There can be awareness of only one object at a time.
Yeah. Which is very difficult.
The self
again.
With our conditions, right awareness cannot arise.
Cannot arise, yeah.
So back to the what is taken for the voice box and the gruffness. So when the citta is conditioned, when the sound is conditioned by citta and is accompanied by these other rupas, as we've discussed, it is also affected by the rupas that have been conditioned by karma that we refer to as the voice box or something like this. So how do they affect the sound?
Like different composition of the four primary rupas.
Okay, so only by way of the four primaries, right, okay. Karma indirectly conditioning it, it is because those rupas of the body sense have been conditioned, the hardness by the karma, which make up the kalapa with the sound at that moment conditioned by citta.
Clearly in that case,
it's because the rupas arising together in the kalapa have to be conditioned by the same factor. So if the sound is conditioned at that moment by citta, then the other rupas arising together with it are also conditioned by citta at that moment. So how has the karma jarupa, such as the voice box, which, you know, so someone speaks hoarsely, how does that affect?
Just citta itself cannot condition sound to arise.
So it has to have the support of karma.
So even though it's citta rupa, it is actually also conditioned by, has the support of karma.
Voice box.
Voice box.
And that's because voice box is conditioned by karma.
Yeah.
That right?
That's why someone
speaks sweetly and someone speaks gruffly because of those rupas that have been conditioned by birth from karma. So even though the sound when one's speaking like now is conditioned by citta, karma is having its effect.
Well, without karma, without the arising of the voice box, the
Can there be sound just thinking to speak?
No. No, it requires the voice box. So it requires the organ, that
requires movement of the body, which produces the passage of air and over the voice box, vocal cords. Yeah. And other factors, the tongue and teeth and lots of things involved.
Yeah.
What's produced by gamma? Well, some of the rupas are conditioned
by
gamma.
The rupas are conditioned by dhamma, gamma, that's right. The rupas of the body that are required for sound to pass out of the body. Mm-hmm.
All sound requires the clashing together of rupas.
And sometimes it's mingled with the rupa, which is conditioned by temperature too. Mm. Yes.
So it could change.
Like now.
Yeah. So the natural sound can change from time to time.
And when you say mingle, what do you mean by
it's
mingle?
It's there.
Yeah.
That sound takes time to travel, so from here it's one. By the time it reaches there, it's one conditioned by Utu.
But it's just sound.
At the same time, sound is a remote object. It doesn't have to contact.
It has to contact the givers.
For hearing to arise, sound has to contact the ear base.
I don't know. I thought there were two that are remote objects, and sound was one of them. There are two types of experienced objects that are remote objects, and sound is one of them.
It doesn't need to be correct.
Visible object. We have to hear, yes, but we hear remote, not contact, not physical contact as tangible objects. And smell, so
tangible is tangible. Tangible only touches the body sense, whereas sound touches ear base.
There still has to be sound impinging on the ear base, though.
And there is logic impinging on the eye base.
Yeah. Right.
I think what it means
so this is different.
It's not. So it's different. It doesn't have to travel and touch your ear.
Can't be carried.
Altogether, what started there, different, but it's rupa conditioning other rupas on and on.
Well, I have heard it explained differently, that it never arrives at your ear.
Not the remote one there.
None of them touch your ear.
It has to be.
No, but I think what it means by remote is it doesn't.
Whereas the tangible object has to be the physical, it has to actually be the contact, but for sound and visible object, it has to impinge on the ear sense, but it's not a physical contact like tangible object.
Which is different from science, which says the vibration has to hit the ear. And I don't want to get into thinking this is all science, but there has to be contact of some kind, no?
I'm not saying I understand how that happens, but I've been reading about it. And it's a remote object. It does not contact physically the ear, according to the Visuddhimagga. So I can't explain how that works.
It's not a closed object like a tangible object.
That's right. Yeah. It's a remote object, which is difficult to understand, and it does not travel to the ear. Can you explain that, Nina?
I think one of the examples was the moon, looking at the moon. Was it so far away for a visible object? But I don't know much about it.
Can it mean that the moon cannot come
to the eye? Nothing else can come to the eye, and sound
but the light,
to the ear,
yeah.
But it arises at a distance. It arises at a distance, and it is heard from a distance.
But the light is carried along.
That's in seeing, the light is carried along.
But the moon itself, that's attached to it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the same situation arises for sound. And it stays at a distance, and it is not more soft because it is at a distance. It's more soft because a number of processes have arisen. So in that, you're right that from a distance, it is more processes that have arisen, but it has not traveled anywhere.
Not just conditions, rupa, other rupa, one rupa, kalapa conditions, another on and on.
I couldn't get that out of the Visuddhimagga, so I can't really say that I agree with that, because it is classified as a remote object.
Oh, it is not as close, like it has a touch, like smell, taste, and
that's right, it does not object. Touch, yeah. Right.
So something must come to impinge, on
what impinges from the invisible light, object.
Yeah, the light
and the sound.
And the sound,
But light is part of visible object.
Of that inseparable rupa, of the primary rupa, which we call the moon.
It's like hearing the sound of the waterfall.
It can be far away sound, but there still is impingement on the ear sense, whereas, the odor or the taste has to be very close at hand.
It has to contact.
Well, there has to be contact with each of them, but it's not the same contact as when it's a tangible object. It can be a far away object. But there's still the impact. But I think that Sukhin is right, that when we think of hearing the voice, actually, it's not the sound that was spoken.
So it's the same then, Acham. The voice we hear now and the voice on the tape, it's both Utu.
Only that original one.
Original one is
17 moments.
Only the original one, 17 moments? I didn't follow that part.
Conditioned by the citta in speech. Yes. But by the time what you hear is conditioned by Utu.
When you say 17 moments, you're saying that
the original
one has to last as long as 17 chitas,
right.
Yes.
And the other conditioned by temperature.
Temperature. But doesn't it? Any rupa lasts as long as 17 chitas, even
it's
not
the
conditioned.
One which is conditioned.
No, it's not the one conditioned. Yeah. But for example, we know that when the Buddha spoke, and the rupas conditioned by chitas or very desirable rupas, and the rupa that is heard conditioned by temperature is not actually the Buddha's. The rupas conditioned by the Buddha's chittas, but I think still have to be the desirable
because
one.
Because it's conditioned by the previous one.
One condition.
So the number of rupas in the kalapa remains the same.
Yeah.
The first one has more.
Yeah, the first one is conditioned by chitta.
So that has more, but the one that is actually heard is just conditioned by temperature, so only 9.
Yeah.
But so because it's conditioned by the original one, if the original one, whether it was desirable or undesirable, what is heard is exactly, has to be the same.
It adds a different, slightly different or expanded take on what is meant by impinge. In a way, some require the contact and the other the sound, lesser contact. So impingement would seem to be then that which has the characteristics that can be experienced by the vijnana jitas, the sense jitas.
No matter whether it's
a
far or close object, or whether it's a visible object or a tangible object, each one has to impinge on the sense, the ear sense or the body sense, in order for there to be the experiencing of it. So it doesn't right. matter. And when it's if there's understanding of visible object or sound or there's no idea of far or near or anything, but in fact the tangible object is what we would conventionally call impinging, whereas the visible object or the sound is not what we would call what we conventionally call impinging, but from a Dharma sense it is impinging.
I guess that's where I was going with it, the, away from the conventional to that which can be impact on the sound, hearing sense, and can be experienced by the jitta that hears.
Could you explain a little bit more about hearing the Buddha's voice and the sound, and none of the sound we hear? I didn't get quite yet.
So, I mean, I use the Buddha because that's obvious example. So when the Buddha speaks, the sounds conditioned by those cheetahs, clearly, in the Buddha's case, are all desirable rupas, those sounds, the desirable rupas. But the sound that is heard when someone else speaks, as Sukhin explained, is not actually the rupa conditioned by citta. By the time it's heard, it's a rupa conditioned by temperature, and it's several sounds removed from the sound conditioned by the citta. So my question was whether the sound conditioned by temperature would always be exactly the same in nature as the one conditioned by the citta. If that one is desirable, the one heard is desirable, and vice versa. If someone speaks harshly and it's undesirable rupa spoken, even if it's by another arahat, then the sound heard now, when karma is conditioned to hear it, would also be undesirable, even though it's not the one conditioned by citta. And that's correct.
Would the same then apply to visible object, in the sense that the original may be conditioned by what?
Utu.
Not only utu, but could be conditioned by kamma, for example, can't it? The visible object we take for body can be conditioned by kamma. That's, say, the so-called original. The one that impinges on the eye sense is just conditioned by utu.
Sarah, so I would think that if the Buddha had a sore throat, for example, that's obviously not going to be the same, right? So the original is good karma, result of good karma, but because of utu, because of sore throat, the voice that comes out, conditioned by utu, followed by would be
citta. It must be citta. Too.
Well, that's the initial one. Mm-hmm. That would be pleasant. But after passing through whatever...
The one heard is the same as the one spoken. So if the one spoken was desirable, the one heard is desirable. Now, in the case of the Buddha, there can only be, even if he had a sore throat, they can only be desirable rupas. They can't be undesirable.
And the one heard too.
And the one heard too. Mm.
Even a gruff voice, I mean.
Well, I don't think the Buddha, if he had a sore throat, would have a gruff voice.
But I think that we should.
Okay, now mind Buddha, anyone else.
But anyone else, for example, another arahat may have a gruff.
Ordinary person may have a,
or like now, someone may have a gruff voice because of a cold or as conditioned by karma.
Right.
So even if someone is explaining Dharma, it may be undesirable rupas that are conditioned by citta.
But let's say the person normally has a good voice, right? But because of sore throat, it comes out.
it could be undesirable.
So I'm assuming that the initial one, that conditioned the chitta, that conditioned the voice, was pleasant, but then it conditioned unpleasant rupas after that. As it passes through.
I think that when they speak initially with the gruff voice, then it may be undesirable rupa, and what is heard is undesirable rupa too.
I think there's one sound conditioned by the jitta initially, and then as it passes through the vocal cords, it becomes gruff.
Mm-hmm. No,
I don't think so. Because the jitta just is motivating the speaking, but the sound is being produced at the vocal cords.
So even someone with normally a good voice with kusala chitta speaks when he or she is not well with sore throat, obviously what we hear is unpleasant. That means what conditioned the sound initially was also unpleasant.
And can it be together with uttu, like cold, sartre?
So the rule is always, if what's heard, if it's pleasant, that means from the very beginning it was pleasant. If it's unpleasant, from the very beginning it was unpleasant.
And that's why, in a way, one attaches a lot of importance to what one thinks of as pleasant or unpleasant sound or visible object, but actually it doesn't really matter, because what's important is the kind of thinking afterwards or the understanding afterwards. Actually, it's just sound, and there can still be reflection on the Dharma, even if it was originally a undesirable rupa that's heard.
So what conditions the hearing of Dhamma as opposed to the voice of a particular person? What conditions the hearing of Dhamma as opposed to the manner of, or the nature of the quality of the voice by which it's spoken?
Well, hearing of Dhamma refers to the kind of considering of those sounds heard. So that is conditioned by prior accumulations, whether there is having heard those sounds, whether there's wise or unwise reflection, whether there's any understanding or not. So an animal in the room can hear those sounds, but no accumulations for any understanding or kusala chittas at that moment.
Gamma that conditions the hearing, among other things, gamma that conditions the hearing of the Dhamma?
Well, that's what I thought, but this came up in Vietnam, and then there was an answer given to the effect that Sarah's just said, which I find a little puzzling, because like in the sutta to Queen Malika, the Buddha mentioned a lot of things that are conditioned by Dhamma, which are not what we call vipaka. So, you know, appearance and various other things, he said, were conditioned by past deeds.
You mean the four wheels?
The four what?
The four wheels. Do live in a good country.
Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Having done merit in the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But when it refers to appearance, well, this is referring to the kind of rupas that are conditioned by karma from the first moment of life onwards. The appearances are all conditioned by karma. You know, the kind of tone of the skin and the color of the eyes. And
place where one lives, that where there is opportunity. Ajahn said just this morning, I heard, it's not exactly this country, but where there is opportunity to hear Dhamma,
right.
That is about the place. We don't have to think of a specific country. And also accumulations in the past. So having done good deeds in the past is a condition. I think kusala citta is understanding. So that some understanding is accumulated. Yes? Now, two more. meeting the right person who can explain the Dhamma. Yeah, that's three. Now four. Adjusting oneself to it. It means that you are open-minded to listen and to apply what you hear. Is that number four? I'm not sure.
In Pali, yoniso manasikara.
Yeah, yeah.
Hearing the Dhamma, like obviously if one comes across the Dhamma in Poland, and then that is the right place, whereas one could live in Bangkok and never hear the right Dhamma. But I think it, well, the hearing of the sounds is conditioned by Dhamma, by Kama, but the considering of what is heard is not, but there has to be the hearing of those sounds in the, in order for there to be the wise attention.
So what's the difference between the hearing, the sound that is subsequently thought as words, Dhamma, teachings, and the sound of something else?
That's right. So the person with the gruff voice could either be abusing you or just talking ordinary talk, or could be talking Dhamma that is intelligible to you, comprehensible. So there have to be conditions why it's one and not the other.
And let's talk about someone with a pleasant voice. Singing a song and talking Dhamma. Because Sarah and Nina were just talking about how it comes down to one's own accumulations and consideration and understanding. But hearing is obviously not only just that, it's also hearing certain sound, right? Which, so what differentiates hearing Dhamma from hearing something else?
Obviously, the sanya.
It's very important, the sanya, which marks those sounds, which leads to a kind of thinking, like if I hear the Dhamma in Thai and there isn't any recognition because sanya is not marking in the same way that it marks when it's sounds in English which can be understood as Dhamma. So it depends on the sanya marking the sounds, which is also accumulated. So a baby doesn't recognize the sound mummy, but a toddler understands that because sanya marks that, those sounds, and knows that this is mummy, so then there are conditions to think about those sounds. And Ajahn was stressing the other day that even when there's, for example, like readings, the seeing of just visible object, but then there's thinking of the sounds that are recognized as well. So actually many different kinds of cheetahs, just like when there's hearing of sound, there's even thinking of shapes and forms as well.
You're still pointing to the accumulations, yeah, which follow from the experience of hearing and seeing.
Because at the moment of hearing the sound,
hearing, there is also sanya marking it at that very moment of hearing also.
Right, but one is vipaka, one is kusala or kusala, still very different, two very different sanyas. But we talk about hearing the Dhamma being the result of kama, and that's a bit confusing because the result of kama is just sound.
Right.
And so Dhamma is the what we think subsequently as Dhamma and as not Dhamma. So,
so that's why if one's talking about something like, for example, sutamaya panya, it's not just hearing the sounds, but the consideration of those sounds, because just hearing those sounds result of karma without any wise consideration is useless, because it's just, as you say, vipaka citta that hears the sounds.
Worldly conditions, praise and blame, wealth and whatever. These things must be conditioned by gamma, I'd have thought.
But we don't all, it is a conventional way of explaining different vipakas. And those are caused by gamma. That's right. True from moment to moment. But when we talk about the eightfold conditions, we usually it's usually explained in a conventional way.
Yeah. But if one's sole exposure to the Dhamma had been through a person who has a gruff voice, there would still have to be have been kusala gamma in the past to have heard the Dhamma. Even though it's strictly speaking as vipaka, it's always unpleasant object.
I think then we have to think more of, in a more wider sense, the good accumulations of kusala karma, which are conditions in a wider sense, not exactly the karma which conditions the vipaka citta at that moment. It depends how to see it.
Be born in a human realm. So the Patisandhi and Citta has to be kusala, so there are also many moments of kusala vipaka too. Without that kusala vipaka, there wouldn't be the hearing of those sounds.
Would it be wrong to conclude that, for example, the eight worldly conditions is not just a matter of vipaka, but also the thinking which follows?
I think that we have to separate the sense though and the mind though, because one hears sound or one hears Dhamma.
One hears sound.
Only, see, so that's a process of hearing. But to understand the meaning of the sound as Dhamma is different. Nothing to do with the sound.
When it's suggested that hearing the Dhamma is a result of karma, so are we talking about karma as a result of karma as only vipaka, but also accumulation?
We
because karma accumulates also.
In general, the situation.
Sutta language rather than
Abhidhamma language.
This was something you asked about on the list.
And we discussed it. Nina was quoting from something she heard you saying on a recording, which was, what is seen is the nimitta of the four primary rupas.
Yes, yes.
And she mentioned that this wasn't clear because she'd think the nimitta of visible object is seen. And although we know the visible object is accompanied by the four primary rupas, it sounds a little confusing to say that what is seen is the nimitta of the four primary rupas. But I think that you mean just that the visible object is accompanied by the primary rupas and it's the nimitta of that visible object that's seen. But when, if you say it, what is seen is the nimitta of the four primary rupas, do you mean just the nimitta of the visible object accompanied by them?
Without the four primary rupas, can they?
Nothing can be seen.
What, the question or the answer?
The answer.
Oh, well, the answer is just that what is meant is that without the four primary rupas, nothing is seen. So if we refer to what is seen as being the nimitta of the four primary rupas, it just means that they, I think this is what I mentioned on the list, it just means that they condition the visible object at that moment.
Yeah.
Anne was suggesting earlier that this kind of discussion is theoretical, it not necessary, can be with understanding.
But I think that you understand what is the object of attachment. Because you see, we do not we are not just attached to the color, but also to the shape and form of the four primary rupa, disguised by the visible object as something all the time. Do you like so this kind of shape? Not only color, do you like also the shape?
That's interesting. Disguised by the four primary rupas as something. Can you elaborate that on that, please?
Primary rupas, it couldn't be
right.
taken for.
Okay,
something.
Okay.
Perception of shape and form can be a reminder about rupa.
Right. Because no one think about the four primary rupas, just think about the cup, shape and form.
That's true.
Yeah. Likewise, when we hear sound, there are many different aspects to it, like volume and pitch and so forth. Do we refer to these as shape and sound also, or shape and shape
of
and
sound.
Form? Mm-hmm. Yes, of sound. Yeah.
Like the sound of waterfall.
The sound of waterfall, yes. Which would you refer to, the shape of that sound?
The shape of sound,
sound.
Of waterfall.
Oh, that auditory equivalent.
But that would be because of a visible object having been seen before and thinking about what
just
is
just the sound itself with the four primary rupas. See?
So the meaning of Anupriyanchana goes beyond just shape as we know it.
More than that.
Can you elaborate more? I'd like to hear more about that subject.
Well, I think it's because that, whether it's the sound or the visible object, is accompanied by the primary rupas and other rupas, that is the reason why there immediately afterwards there is thoughts and ideas about nimitta nupiyanjana or the signs and details, no matter you're talking about the sound or the visible object, and that's why there can be ideas of cup and shape and waterfall.
Yeah, it's instantaneous, and it's the one for sound is the auditory equivalent of shape and form.
So it's not. Sarah used the term
science
in detail.
Yes.
So that's a more general term?
This is a good subject for our informal discussion in Krenka Chang the first day, I think, to elaborate more on this.
You can keep doing it now.
No need to wait.
Why wait?
So, Achan, it's not just nimitta and
Anupiyanchana.
It must be Anupiyanchana and concepts. Means, okay, Anupiyanchana is also thinking, but it's like a necessary concept before one thinks in terms of this and that object. So there must be Anupiyanchana after Nimitta. At most basic and most fundamental level, before there can be thinking in terms of objects. So it's Nimitta, Anupiyanchana and something. Invisible object.
It depends on attention at that very moment.
Yes, the one, it does yeah. also. Okay.
And also, it depends on, I think, how one is using nimitta in that context, because as we know, each reality, each conditioned reality has nimitta, vijnana, nimitta, rupa, nimitta. So even in the first mind door process, it is nimitta of reality. But now we're talking about nimitta in terms of nimitta nupiyanjana, the signs and details. And actually in Vietnam, someone asked you whether nimitta was a concept. And at that point you said yes, because it cannot arise and fall, so it doesn't bring any understanding of reality. So I think that it depends how nimitta is being used, whether it's referring to rupa nimitta or whether it's the shapes and details, nimitta and upyanjana, or a kind of concept, nimitta of concept.
Like a fire stick.
Like a fire stick, yes. So it depends. Because when in the discussion you said that it was a concept and it cannot rise and fall and doesn't bring any understanding of reality, but as we know, even when there is direct understanding of reality, even when it's vipassana jnana, it is nimitta of the reality, no idea of shape and form of at that point, because it's just the nimitta of the reality only that is known.
Because no one can understand just one single moment like the fire stick.
Yes.
So Sarah, it would be rupa, nimitta, nimitta. I mean, nimitta first meaning, nimitta second meaning.
Like even when it's direct understanding of reality, actually there's seeing, thinking, and it's not just one visible object, it is still the nimitta, but no idea of shape of cup or this kind of...
And also, on the general subject of nimitta and upanishad, when we talk about the characteristic of the dhamma, that is, of the visible object or audible object, this is not referring to the nimitta and anubhanchana. So the characteristic is something other than those attributes.
So what is seen now?
That's the question. Visible object. Nimitta, visible object. Because we forget.
Yeah, it has to be a rupa which is seen, visible object, or you call it nimitta. If it's the other meaning of nimitta, sign, that cannot be seen. That can only be thought about.
And as I understand it, Ajahn, the characteristic of every visible object, instance of visible object, is the same.
The characteristic
of visible object is the same regardless of what one is looking at, if we can speak conventionally.
But in reality, only one unit of visible object cannot be seen. Many.
Only one unit of visible object cannot be
seen. One
moment. Single moment.
Like the fire stick. Oh.
Yeah, but means there must be many seeings also, right? But each seeing is just one visible object.
That's right. It's aware of the circle and not the actual point of the fire.
When we refer to the fire stick and the visible object that's seen at that moment, the nimitta, can one say still that it is that it's still the nimitta and upyanjana of visible object that's seen, or that is only thinking about it
after
it must be? So this is what I mean by it's when we refer to that nimitta, it's thinking later because it's not actually seen.
It's the nimitta
of the visible object that's seen.
Afterwards.
Yes. Seeing experiences visible nimitta means it's not experiencing visible object?
Well, that's what we've been saying. That
in the fire stick example, meaning of nimitta, right? It is as if it was experiencing the visible object. So the characteristic is there. Even though, because awareness at beginning level wouldn't be sharp enough to take individual
moments. Awareness, I understand that it would require many visible objects. Awareness actually knows not just one.
I see, so you're asking about seeing itself.
Seeing itself. seeing itself.
Experience as a visible object.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the animator.
Not the animator.
Reality of the visible object. Right understanding arises in sense door process, say the eye door process, or the first mind door process afterwards. It's still nimitta of. But if it, in the eye door process, every citta experiences visible object.
So is that because one rupa is not enough to be experienced by awareness?
It's enough to be seen.
To be experienced by awareness, by Panya.
Even it's not awareness, it's enough to be seen.
It is.
Yeah.
It has to be one rupa with one seeing consciousness. But we're talking about when there's awareness, it's many.
I would put like it now. Another way. Awareness is not strong enough to be aware of a single rupa.
Okay. Yeah, the Buddha would probably see one.
Even it's wrong. It's not the moment at all to be able to experience only one object at a time.
Like it cannot, yeah.
Has to be nimitta.
It has to be nimitta.
For example, between the seeing consciousness and sampatthicanna and sandarana, who knows now? Only that which can experience is known. It's not self.
And can awareness rise just one moment?
Why not? Because it has to, one at a time.
I thought it's not possible.
One awareness?
Can awareness one at a
one
time?
One citta?
One citta.
Yeah.
It is more like
but it does not appear as one.
No, Nina, my question is, can citta with panya that knows visible object be only one citta and no more?
I guess my thought on that is, does it matter? Citta with panya that knows, that is aware of the reality.
Seven moments.
Oh, yes, seven moments. I understand that. Yeah. That part, yes. But I'm saying more than one process. That's what I mean, more than one process.
In a process?
So it's only one process can happen, only one process.
But with seven moments of panya.
Seven moments of panya. Now, because we are also talking about when there's awareness, it's many visible object, not just one. So does it follow that also many moments of awareness?
Like now, but understanding is there. Well, there is no understanding now.
So it actually has to be
awareness in many processes for that visible object to
there
appear.
Are many. Yeah.
Actually, in one process, okay, seven citta, but it would have to be many, many processes for that characteristic to be known. Because, for example, like vipassana jnana, where understanding can arise in sense or mind or process, and it doesn't matter at all because it's the same visible object, but in a sense or process, it is the reality of rupa that is experienced, but would have to be many, many for the reality to be known.
That's why it's
needed. And when it's known, there'd be no thinking about how many processes or anything else. No, it would just be the reality, just the characteristic. And I guess that's why I said, does it matter?
But for vipassana jnana, that has to be through mind, because it is about nama and rupa, to know the difference between nama and rupa. So it is the mind process. Right?
Even so, because visible object is experienced through eye door or mind door, there's no knowing whether the visible object which appears is experience through the eye-door or the mind-door, because exactly the same characteristic of reality. But other realities, such as cheetahs, can only be known through the mind-door.
We always talk about sati of the object we experience now, but the sati in the same object that has direct experience of, say, visible object, has that visible object as its visible object as its object, and it's the nimitta in the next jitta which has the sati of the, as I understand it, it's sati of nimitta, right?
Right, because in the actual eye-door process, the reality, the visible object, is experienced by all the cheetahs in that process. But in the mind-door afterwards, it's the nimitta of visible object, even though it's the same characteristic. But the point Ajahn was also just making was that even when it's vipassana jnana, it's not just one nimitta of one rupa nimitta. It has to be many, many in order for that reality to be known.
Conventionally, at the same moment, we just conventionally say it's at the same moment.
Right, that's right.
Because we want to emphasize that it is a present object and not a thinking object.
And in the text, in the commentaries, they still call it
present
object. Yes.
Another point that came up was about vipassana jnana and ekagata and samadhi, and we were discussing how usually ekagata arises at each moment with each citta, and usually it's a different object that's experienced at each moment, so the ekagata doesn't appear as samadhi. But if it is the same object experienced repeatedly, such as in the development of samatha, then it appears as samadhi, and the nature of that ekagata can be known. And now, for example, there's a lot of unwholesome concentration on an object. The concentration can appear, but it's unwholesome concentration. And you mentioned that, for example, at vipassana jnana, because of the strength of the understanding of reality, assisted by the ekagata, which is of the degree of access, so the nature of samadhi is apparent, can be known. But you also say that even at that time, it's not just one object, it's many different realities that are experienced. So,
but they can be experienced just one at a nimitta.
One nimitta repeatedly, mm-hmm. so that it's the samadhi is apparent.
I see.
But I don't understand how ekagata can appear, because what appears is the object.
Different moments, different objects.
You mean ekagata becomes the object of citta?
Right, it's just like any other reality.
So just like any other reality, it, like now, it doesn't appear, it's not known, or if it seems that there's strong concentration, it's bound to be akusala concentration.
Right. Even but at that time, ekagata can appear?
So ekagata can appear at that time because of the, as I understand, because of the strength of that ekagata, which is at the level of upachara. But what my question was, it's not just because of the degree of concentration, but because it has to be focused on the same object repeatedly in order to appear as samadhi. So that was my question.
And Ajahn's answer was it can be
the same depending on panya. When panya is wrong, the ekagata is wrong too.
That, no, I understand. If panya is there, it can know ekagata. But Sarah was saying that it appears even when it's akusala. Appears to what?
A bit like dosa.
Strong now, there can be some idea of dosa. It may not be, it's not understanding the reality as anatta, but the dosa, the you know, there's an idea of when there is strong dosa, strong when one's angry, just like there can be some knowing of when there's concentration.
And I think you also mentioned that when the
ekagata, for example, at that moment when the kusala one is strong, then the understanding sees clearly because of the ekagata, so they support each other at that moment. So that's why it appears as
when Panya understands reality sharper, the characteristic of samadhi can appear together with Panya. It does not appear like it has to be object, but at moment when the object is so clear, right then the characteristic of samadhi is there.
I think what Sarah's talking about is what appears is the fact that there is concentration on a particular object rather than the characteristic of ekagata as, you know, as a function of with as it arises now with every citta. So it's really the...
So I can understand it's probably the same way. Like now we know anger even though there's no panya. It's because there is anger and it's nimitta appears to distraction.
Yeah. Example. Yeah.
So in that case when ekagata appears, it, we can say the nimitta of ekagata appears.
All nimitta.
So, I mean, they
condition each other. When panya is stronger, then the ekagata appears as samadhi, and when it is, the ekagata is strongly, what you said before, was then the understanding sees more clearly, so they both need each other.
Because you see that when there is the development of awareness and panya develops, and when panya develops, the object appears well or clear,
yes,
more than usual,
yes,
on and on. So the characteristic of panya together with samadhi appear at that very moment, which can understand better.
And the question that Robert was asking in
Vietnam about Kanika, because even at that moment, it's still, even if it is of a degree of upachara, but it's still
because
momentary.
Because Nayana is upachara, but when it's not, it's Kanika.
Kanika, at other moments. It is when the, just as in the developmental samatha bhavana, like now, the concentration is kanika, momentary, but when it is of the degree of upachara or access, then it is not called kanika because it is upachara, and then at other moments in between, it is referred to as kanika, momentary, meaning just taking a rising for a moment of an object. And in the development of vipassana, now kanika, at a moment of vipassana jnana, because the ekagata is of the degree of access upachara, so then at that moment it's not kanika, but afterwards kanika as usual. But even at that moment of upachara, I mean, it's still momentary in the sense that it arises for a moment, but just the term is not used
because the object is clear.
Because the object is clear.
Just like to clarify, when we talk about samadhi in the context of, say, samatha, and we talk about citta taking the same object, I'm just wondering whether that's really what is happening. I can see in the case of the kasina, for example, because there's an image of the kasina, but even then, samatha is really about contemplating on subject matter. So if we take, say, Marana Sati, for example, it's reflecting on death. If we take Buddha nosati, it's reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha. So the concentration there is not really on a single object as such, but it's on the subject matter of
contemplation. Until only one single object can condition such degree of tranquility.
What would be an example of that then in the case of, say, Maranasati?
Okay, without understanding of the teachings at all, even one hears Buddha, no meaning. But after one understands a lot of his virtues and his kindness, then just hearing Buddha, it conditions different citta with different calm and right understanding.
That's even that's not a single object, it's two syllables.
No counting, yes. Because jitta arises and works so very elaborately.
But that's why the development of samatha with, say, Buddha's qualities or death can only be developed up to upachara level, not to jhana level, that. Because it requires some contemplation.
So in the case of Kasina, for example, which can lead to jhana, when we're talking about concentration on the object, are we talking about on the image that's been developed, or are we talking about the contemplation of what it means, why the earth Kasina, for example, can support jhana?
Because at the moment of looking at the Kasina, no idea about people and things. Only patui or whatever it is, stage or what. It means that the right understanding of nothing that should be clinged to at all.
And so in the case of Maranasati, for example?
Different object.
Different objects,
yes, that's
not
why
a single
there are 40
object.
Objects.
So that's why what?
That's why there are 40 different objects.
40 objects. What would be an example, though, of...
To become with the understanding of death, which will come at any time, is different from having the mindset on the Kasina.
Kasina, yes.
And that's exactly why Kasina, that as object, can be object right up to jhana and Maranasati can't.
Right, but still... When samatha with Maranasati as subject is developed, then concentration also develops at the higher stages of the samatha. And does that quality of concentration become apparent?
And right understanding, seeing the danger of attachment and
yes.
to.
Yes.
For example, now, how many times do you think about death today? Even. See? So if there is some moment of thinking about death, kusala citta is there. Not enough for concentration to grow or to develop.
I think the question might be, for example, what the object of upachara samadhi is. I mean, because for each of the samatha development, there must be a point where there is upachara samadhi. So at that moment, for example, death, upachara samadhi knows what at that with that subject. When contemplating on death, for example, and one reaches upachara samadhi, what is the object at that time of citta?
It depends on right understanding and kusala. It is not said that it has to pattern, that you have to think like this at all.
Right. So,
But when you think of death, you can think about many, many different... Yeah.
Right.
But it's a contemplation.
We're just focusing on the concentration aspect at that time.
Hmm.
Because of the degree of understanding and the degree of calm that the concentration is of that degree at that time.
It's difficult to say that it's concentration on the single object.
No need.
Yeah, no need. I think it's not an appropriate description of all
when concentration across all the objects or subjects of samatha.
But there must be panya which sees the difference between kusala and akusala, calm and not calm.
I think when Ajahn mentioned single object, so it means that when it's not like now, there may be a moment of thinking in a wholesome way about death one instant, but then there's thinking of lots of other objects with attachment immediately afterwards. So I think it refers to that kind of reflection which isn't interrupted repeatedly by attachment to other sense objects, because the danger of attachment to sense objects has been better understood.
I mean, I think there's a popular misconception about concentration on a single object as defining samatha, development of samatha.
In one of the discussions in Vietnam on the meaning of jhana, and I mentioned the two kinds of jhana, Aramanupanijana and Lakanupanijana. And Aramanupanijana refers to Aramana, the object of jhana, as in the development of samatha. So at moments of jhana, it is Aramanupanijana, and Lakanupanijana when it is the characteristic of reality. So at moments of enlightenment, it is jhana, Lakanupanijana. Can we say that from the beginning of the development of calm or the development of vipassana, that it is Aramanupanijana and Lakanupanijana being developed from the beginning?
Not necessary to think about whether it's or it's not.
Well, the reason I ask is because...
because it has to be different from daily life.
Right. But it has to be moments of development. So
with right understanding.
With right understanding. But the point is that at any moment with right understanding, when it is the development, whether it's samatha bhavana or vipassana bhavana, then that kind of jhana is being developed, or we cannot say that?
By way of jhana paccaya it is, but not by way of the development, because it's not great or strong enough.
Right, so you wouldn't refer to it as aramanu or...
Yeah, I mean, just as development of samatha at the basic level, you wouldn't call that jhana, right?
Like, well, by jhana factors, yes, but you wouldn't call it jhana itself, no.
About what you mentioned a bit earlier about the object during vipassana jhana being very clear, hence the samadhi is upachara samadhi. Can we say that it's because of functions of all cetasikas that makes it upachara samadhi?
I think that usually there is khanika samadhi right now, but when reality is experienced, just one characteristic at a time, quite different. That's why it is the upachara. One object at a time, see? Why?
One object.
Yeah. And now it's not one object.
So it's upachara, the kind of samadhi is defined not only by the quality of consciousness, but also how the object appears.
And it indicates the quality of citta.
And
the understanding of that object that appears. Jonathan said, like if one's talking now about akusala samadhi, well then it's when the concentration repeatedly takes the same object, then it appears as samadhi, akusala samadhi. But in the case of kusala samadhi, for example, that vipassana jnana, then it cannot be said that it's because it is the same object that is experienced, that's why it appears as samadhi. One wouldn't say that.
the object is exactly the same right now. Mm. See,
but different objects. So,
but
different
it
moments.
Does not appear just one at a time.
No.
But when Panya is there, and when it is with the highly developed, no intention, because it has to be as anatta as it is. So when it is anatta, it is like this. But no understanding of the anattaness of reality right now, right? But by then, the anattaness of sati and panya and the object are there.
I'm just trying to clarify the comment you made that when it is the same object, like now, there is ekagata at each moment, different object at each moment, and only when it is the same object experienced repeatedly that the characteristic of samadhi appears. So in the development of samatha, that is clear when it is the same object experienced repeatedly, the characteristic of samadhi
but
appears.
No understanding of anatta-ness.
No.
See.
But when we're talking about vipassana jnana, it doesn't have to be the same object appearing at all.
Exactly the same. But panya is there, which understands the anatta-ness that happened, while the samatha doesn't have such understanding.
Object at a time appears clearly, so in that sense.
Same object in samatha. I think we mean the same subject matter. Really. Like Marana Sati, for example. It's about death.
Same subject matter.
Because it seems to me that samatha is about right contemplation of the subject matter, which we call the object. But
up to upajara level.
But after that, not.
After that, when it's jhana, it's not
contemplation.
And what about the concept of signs and counter signs and all that, what that means?
As I understand it, he asked about signs and counter-signs, nimitta, when in the context of samatha. This is relevant for kasina, for example. I don't know the word for counter. I think sign is nimitta, but I don't know counter-sign. So when the subject of contemplation for samatha is kasina, then,
and color, sign too.
And color. Mm-hmm. I just said, for example.
And breath.
And breath.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure about breath.
Yeah, there must be.
Is there a vision, not a visual nimitta?
So what is nimitta?
Breath separately after we
spoke
for the moment.
Nimitta is nimitta.
In answer to Sakin's question. So for Kasina.
And color?
Well, that would be the same.
Good, too.
Yeah. But not for, say, Maranasati. There's no sign and countersign for Maranasati.
No. It must be contemplated.
Yeah.
So what's the sign
for breath in that sense? Or
different
sign?
People have different signs.
Oh, I see. All right.
Can anybody speak to that word countersign? It's really quite anonymous to me, unknown. Countersign.
Is there any explanation? Is there any explanation on that?
No, I just remember vaguely about something that you...
At some point, while concentrating on a kasina, then you have the image of that, right, which you can recall. Instead of looking, you can recall. Something like that. I'm not
Is
sure.
It to do with being able to turn it around and that sort of thing?
Can it be?
I remember it's been at least 10 years.
I think so.
Yeah.
It,
It's stronger than the nectar.
Yeah.
Can it be without the mark or the sign that we have made it for object of concentration? Then any time without that, there can be the...
Mental
image.
Right. Without the original
breath one. So we're not talking about any understanding of the reality when we're talking about samatha. We're just talking about so in terms of the reality, as you mentioned, it has nothing to do with what we think of as being the arising and falling away of breath now, because this is just a concept like body, nothing to do with the rupa conditioned by citta, and in the development of calmness. So it's not understanding of the reality. It's understanding of the concept, like now life depends on breath. So the way it's reflected will depend on different accumulations in the development of samatha.
It's like the disc, but it's not the disc, but it's breath.
And again, that's why there can be the counter sign.
And I think also because breath comes down to being one of the three primary elements, so it depends on which one. If it's hot earth element, then it'll have its own sign, countersign. If it's wind element, it has own sign and countersign. And if it's heat, right, each individual has his own idea based on
how it
appears.
Would that be
was breath nimitta as opposed to just hardness or air?
You're talking about is
elements.
You say the three primaries, you're talking about breath as object of satipatthana.
No. Actually, what's taken for breath must be either one of these three, right?
Mm.
Normal. I mean, that's our experience. We know breath because we feel wind or heat or motion pressure. And of course, we think a lot. We have concepts about it.
Thinking about it, but not knowing.
Have concepts about it.
Knowing the reality.
No, not knowing the reality, but without the concept. Without the reality, there wouldn't be the concept. So.
But the concept could be based on more than one reality, then, couldn't it?
Yes, it would.
A combination
of
realities.
It would. But what I'm wondering is, when it comes to development of jhana to that level, whether it would be a concept of so many, or would it be based on one, at some point, it would be on one of these, and not all.
For samatha, it's not the reality of breath, but it's only breathing in and out. And yeah.
Just the idea.
Uh huh. Like.
Oh, without breathing in and out now, there's no life, nothing to do with the reality.
But Ajahn, but in and out is a long story. How can that be compared to a kasina, for example?
Just to be object of concentration.
But
with right understanding that life only depends on breath.
No, we were talking earlier about breath can also have sign and countersign like kasina. And if we're talking about in and out, I don't see how.
Because breath is not round.
No. And that's why my suggestion, it's not round, and also not the idea of in and out when it comes to that stage of taking.
In and out is not the breath moving in and out. That is a concept. But there is an in-breath and an out-breath. And the vayu.
Then that's a long story.
It is a long story, but the vayu, which is the dead,
dhatu,
which makes it either in or out, that is not a story.
Right, and that's where I was approaching, whether it's vayu, it's.
It is still a story in that.
It's not the reality of breath. It's still a concept and idea of breath, but not the reality, which is not what we think of as the wind the Vayu Dhatu conditioned breathing.
No, I'm not talking about the wind, that kind of wind. It is the Dhatu Vayu, which is part of the primary rupas, and that's what makes the difference between in-breath and out-breath.
But in so much...
And it's counted as only one type because they're chitta-chitta rupa.
But there's the idea of in-breath and
yes,
out-breath.
Yeah. There is an idea of in-breath and out-breath.
So it's not the reality of breath.
It's just the...
Well, it can be a reality. I mean, there is such a reality.
But the concept is not like in and out.
That's
in.
Right,
isn't it?
Because the reality of breath
is conditioned by almost every citta, and by the time there's any kind of... one has a concept or any idea of in and out, countless... breaths have been conditioned. So that idea of breath that one has, even in the development of samatha right up to jhana, it's not the reality of breath. Nothing is known about the reality of breath. No.
Nothing is known about the
reality of breath because it doesn't appear at all.
Like hair, the idea of hair. Yeah, the idea of breath.
Yeah. And on that point, different points.
Like we were just mentioning about anger. So we mentioned before that when kilesa are of the degree of nivaranas, they are more obvious or evident, such as, you know, if there's strong attachment, it's obvious there's strong attachment. Or if there's anger, it's strong, it's evident. Whereas if it's an asava, for example, nothing known about the attachment because it's so subtle. When we say that the nivarana is obvious, like the anger, well, it doesn't mean anything is known about anger as a reality, as not self. So actually it's just when we say it's obvious, it's only thinking about anger. So it's only obvious in the sense of thinking about it.
Do we have to think when it's wrong?
We don't have to, but...
I'm just saying, like, even for a child or who's never heard about the Dhamma, we can say it's obvious that there is anger, but actually nothing is known about the reality because it is just...
It's not panya.
It's not panya at all.
Everyone knows.
Everyone knows.
In fact, at those moments, what's taken for anger is... Not dosa. It's me who is angry.
My anger. And so it is thinking about it.
Otherwise there couldn't be that idea.
But there must be anger.
There has to be anger, otherwise there couldn't be anger.
Without taking certain signs, feelings, for self, they wouldn't be thinking about it. So there's many, many.
So, Pina, do you think anything can be known about the reality of breath?
Theoretically. Theoretically. And I think in the Sudhi Magad, it says only. The Buddha and maybe his best arahants can actually know breath.
Yeah, well,
you mean the reality of what we take for breath?
Mahapurisha. No, the reality of breath.
Breath itself?
Breath is a reality.
Which reality?
It is the reality that arises because of jitta. It has 9 dhatu. It is a reality, but we cannot know
nine
it because it
eight.
Is much too subtle. Hmm?
9 or 8, usually.
9.
Usually.
Well, I haven't...
Right now, including sound.
Including sound, yes. 9 when there is sound, but
it's not
I
heard.
Understood that breath always has 9, but maybe I'm
9 or 8 what?
Dhatu. Rupa dhatu.
The lapa. Sound. The lapa.
It plus sound.
Rupa.
It and
the
sound.
The indivisible plus sound.
So.
It is a reality.
Well, we don't normally talk about the galapa as being a reality. It's just the individual dhammas, rupas.
Reality.
It's a reality.
Yeah.
Right. What is?
The nine dhatu that make up the galapa.
Well, they are the realities.
And those particular ones are breath.
Right. We call them, we take them for breath.
But I'm not sure about eight or nine because I have read about nine too.
Yes.
But I think that it must be something different from usual. Otherwise, the sound must always be heard. If there's no contact between the breath, there's no sound, I think. But just the galapa itself.
I haven't been able to work that out theoretically from what I have read, but I have read that the sound.
So there must be something when we read about anything different. There must be something that can be explained, but it's not explained.
No, it's not explained.
But when it's not heard, it could be just because it's not loud enough. Breath, that's not heard.
When there's no contact between the hardness. Can there be sound?
No, but we are assuming that there is contact
so
all the time.
So, just one galapa, can there be any collision?
No, 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 no.
So, can there be condition for sound?
I don't know much about breath, but Jonathan, when you said that the eight inseparables, or the eight or the nine, the nonad, are composed of the separate elements. Yes, they are. But when we think of visible object, for instance, we talk about visible object, and there is that quality of visible object that is just that. And is it that same for breath? That the no. No, I know, with the one with breath. But I was just maybe I won't pursue.
And if we say there are 28 rupas and 52 jhana seekers and 89 or 121 jittas. None of those are breath as such. We understand what we're talking about, but just to remind us that those are the reality, the dhammas.
I mean, like breath, this is not breath, right? But this is breath. And one is conditioned by chitta, and the other, different kind of chitta, because this is also. When we hear about breath being the object of only the Mahapurushas, it means those that know the difference between.
I think it refers to biodati
and all the other conditioned by all the other rupas in the kalapa, which are conditioned. By Chitta, but I think it is so subtle and refined because it's the one that arises, is conditioned by Chitta at every moment. It's nothing to do with any idea one has of it. So it arises and falls away so fast, and it's that particular one that it's completely unknown. But I think it is the Bio-Dhatu in particular, conditioned by the other rupas, all of which have been conditioned by Chitta, that particular one.
When it's rupa conditioned by Chitta, it has to be what Chitta conditioned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every Chitta except the
16 Chittas. Uh-huh. You mentioned the 10 Pancha, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, the Patisandhi, the Chuti Chitta of the Arahat and the
Vipaka
and the four Arupa Brahma Vipaka Chittas.